6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel. We are recording the episode for mid-November, which is all about kind of youth in the X-Men in an odd way. I didn't really plan it that way. It just kind of turned out that way. I'm so delighted to be joined by a person that I'm so inspired by and really enjoy recording with. I can't wait to have you back on again and again. The incredible Robin Moffat, or Negasonic Tranny Warhead, from Instagram. And we're here to talk about Negasonic Teenage Warhead. The inspiration for Robin's infamous Instagram name. Robin, let me have you introduce yourself. Let everybody know your pronouns. And I would love if you'd share with our listeners a little bit of your origin story today.
Of course. So my name is Robin Moffat. I am, as Chad has mentioned, known as Negasonic Tranny Warhead on Instagram. I am a drag artist living in Glasgow in Scotland. I have been doing drag for about 10 years now under the drag name of Oktoberfist. I studied German at university. I was born in October and I decided, how can I make this work? Meshed it all together and I've been doing it for far too long, much to the disappointment of my knees. We continue to persevere.
I thought you said your niece, but it's your knees. That makes more sense.
My knees. Yes, my knees. I hope for all the American listeners, my accent does not cloud their interpretation of Ellie Femister too much today. But look, it's a good crash course. I'm fairly easy to understand, Scott. My husband, on the other hand, we are just back from a holiday in Japan. Watching him try to interact with Japanese people, so much fun. They could not understand a word he said.
That's delightful, though.
Oh, it was great for me. I had a fabulous time being the translator, given that I speak about 3 words of Japanese. That was so much fun.
What an epic vacation, though.
Oh, it was amazing. The travel there and the travel back was not so amazing. I have been recovering for the past 2.5 weeks. It's not even the jet lag, it's the social malaise of going from such a wonderfully clean and organized country like Japan and then finding myself in London Gatwick Airport of all places and being my God, this is fascinating.
I've experienced that a little myself. When you go on a trip and you find community and purpose and peace in a different way, and then you got to go back to that job that you don't always love or the people who don't always treat you the same. That's something I've experienced in my life before. I fully understand. Like, it's a grieving process sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it, is when you find, I had this experience the first ever time I went to Berlin in Germany. I came back to Scotland and I was just like, I found a place where I felt so natural and at home. And then you come back to a place that you don't resonate with as much. And yeah, I think grieving process is the right word for it. And I think grieving process is such a topic that we're going to be touching on today, because I feel like that is just Ellie Femister's life.
There is a weird way of topics working their way into a character conversation. And I already am resonating with that based on the research for this character. Yeah, I fully understand. I'm very much of the mindset of like, you got to grow where you're planted sometimes. I'm all about like living your dreams and seizing opportunities. But when I first came out, I was 32 and I had a baby and a toddler, and I had never figured out how to like find myself. But there was this clear decision I had to make, like, if I want to be a great father, I got to stay here, and how can I like live my life and do big things? And I started writing books and making films in my spare time, you know? That idea of like making the best of a situation, creating reality around us that suits the thing that we have control over versus the things we don't have control over, and what it's like to try to resist that destiny. Because when we do that, it results in depression and frustration and diminishing ourselves. And I think all of those are huge topics when it comes to Ellie's character. But
Oh,
tell everybody, if
definitely.
you would, a little bit about your own journey as a queer person, whatever you're willing to share. And I'd love to hear what your connection is to this character and how you chose your screen name.
Okay, so the story of my queerness and how it relates to Ellie Pfannister, a documentary by Robin Moffat. My first experience coming out, I have done it so many times that it's like old hat for me now. My first time coming out was at the age of 14. I told some friends at the time that I was bisexual. I then realized that my attraction mostly lay towards men. That has kind of changed as I've gotten older, but I realized that and was outed as gay at the same time.
Growing up in a male-identified body at the time.
Yes. Yes. So growing up, having the experience of thinking that I was a gay male because I knew there was something with my gender that I couldn't quite pin down or explain, that felt like far too big of a conversation for me to even have internally. And I had knew no trans people or non-binary people. I had no one that I could have that conversation with in person.
And this is the thing
So
with parents. If you don't give your children the education or exposure and instead only teach them what's wrong with society or what you shouldn't be, it takes people so long to figure out who they are when every child deserves to know who they are from the beginning. We're going to get a lot of these therapy dad messages from me today, everyone. So just be patient.
Perfect. I mean, it's interesting that you say that because my experience, I mainly grew up with just my mum, and she has been such an amazing figure. She has not always understood all the queer stuff that I have thrown myself into with reckless abandon, but she has been very supportive and open-minded about everything. My dad is not in my life and hasn't been for about a decade now. As I was growing up, there was always just such a insistence from him that I would grow up to be like a boy and like football and do all these things that just did not resonate with me. And he, for reasons associated with that, we don't talk anymore. It's fine. No big loss on my part. My mum has been enough of a mum and dad for me. She's been such an amazing figure. And I think from such a young age, watching her as a woman who is very resolute in her womanhood, but is also quite gender, she's willing to push back on gender roles. She is happy to fit in with the men, fit in with women. She'll do whatever suits her. And she's always kind of done her own thing. And that has been such an inspiration to me. And it's something that when I was younger, I couldn't really carry that through. I didn't really understand that I was a woman. And then as I got older, I was like, this identity of being a gay man just doesn't fit with me. It's like the attraction thing. Yeah, more or less like men. There's something here. And then I tried to come out in my 20s. The bureaucratic
Come
and
out
medical
as
processes
gay,
as trans,
as
I.
trans. So there was a point where you realized I'm not queer, I'm not gay, I'm like my identity internally is not matching what's external. Like I don't feel right in
Exactly.
this form.
And I tried to have that coming out process. I told some friends, I told my mum, everyone was supportive. But then I looked at the bureaucratic and medical processes that trans people have to conform to and go through in the UK. And I did not have the mental fortitude or constitution to handle that. So I went back into the closet. I told everyone, no, I was wrong. I'm just gay. And it was a very miserable and dark time because I had come so close to realizing who I was. And then I went back and sort of hid away from it. And luckily, at that point, I was doing drag. So I had some sort of outlet to express my femininity, but it wasn't enough. And it always felt like I was just getting enough of a taste of it to like keep on keeping on. But I never really realized the way I always describe it now. It's like having spent so long living my life in black and white. I didn't know what colors I was missing. And then coming out
It's
trans.
very Kansas to Oz. When I came out, I
Yeah.
referred to it as like, oh, I've been holding my breath for 30 years. And now that I've had oxygen, there's no
Yes.
way I can go back to holding my breath again.
Definitely. No, that's a really good way of expressing it. A release of so much pressure that you didn't realize you were carrying. And it is having had that experience of getting rid of it and then taking it back on. I don't know now that I look back on those years of my life, I don't know how I managed to keep going for so long.
I think every straight cis person I know too has things that they feel lucky to have survived. There are
Yeah.
parts of their story that they go, oh man, I don't know how I got through that part of that divorce or that year in school or that, trial or that time my parent died. Like we have those things. The difference, I think, for queer people, people of color, disabled people, in different capacities and in different ways for each, depending on where we live, there's a thing we just learn to carry where we learn not to have any expectations of the world. So for a person of color, you feel looked at all the time. For a person who's disabled, you feel set aside all the time. For a person who's queer, it's almost as though you never get the opportunity to ask yourself any questions at all. And then you're made to feel selfish or weird or odd. So when you start to exhale, there's a whole process of like unpacking the trauma of what it was like to be in the closet, even though we didn't quite see it as a trauma until we came
Yeah,
out. And then there's all
no,
the
definitely.
intersectionality that happens afterward and like the growth and the adolescence and like it's so much.
Yeah, I'm very lucky now, having gone through the whole, as I said, the bureaucratic and administrative medical processes that trans people experience in the United Kingdom, having had to pay for it all myself privately, which is very expensive in the UK because we don't have much of a private healthcare scene. The waiting lists for trans people in the United Kingdom on our public healthcare on the NHS is, you're easily talking years. I've been waiting about 6 years now to see someone through the NHS for my transition healthcare, and in that time I've had to pay for everything privately. It's a lot, but I am very lucky that I am now in a relationship with and married to a trans man. So we find a lot of solidarity, and even though we are transitions from sort of the opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of gender, we have so much shared experience. It's very helpful to have someone in my life who knows exactly what I have gone through, even if it's not entirely the same. And we both say this because he came to realize his sexuality before his gender identity as well. Going from being gay or a lesbian to being trans is a very strange experience, because when you are queer in terms of who you love, your people take umbrage and issue with the way that you express your internal love and desire. Whereas once you transition, people take umbrage with who you are as much more of a fundamental person. It's your expression of your sense of self. And it's very strange because for me, in some ways, I have processed and dealt with the fact that people will take issue with me for who I am at such a young age. But the specific reason that they take issue with me has changed over the years. And I'm just like, I'm just a person trying to live my life. I just want to go about and buy the food in that shop or go to the bathroom. Why is this such a problem?
There's a thing where I'm a therapist in my day job, and I see, let's say we have a cisgendered male and a cisgendered female who are in therapy, and they get upset at each other. The female will say something like, "You're being a jerk," to which he will then reply, "And you're being a fucking bitch." And I have to be like, "Those are not the same things. Those words, jerk and bitch, don't carry the same weight." And there's this odd thing in society where we kind of have this internal ranking system where the farther down the social pecking order someone falls, the more right we have to use words that harm that person. And we
Definitely.
have in every subgroup, from people of color to immigrants to disabled people to queer and trans people, we have words in our language that are meant to be used as insults. So it's almost as though people give themselves permission to have greater levels of rage, verbally or physically, toward people who identify as trans, because they've just always grown up thinking that that's the lowest possible place to be.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting to make this about Ellie for a minute. Ellie Fimester, Negasonic Teenage War. Moorhead is a character that is created by a non-binary writer, Grant Morrison, in the Genosha arc, and she is created simply to die. She has seen a vision of death, and then she dies. And it's years later in the comics where we have her reborn in a couple different forms, where it's almost as though she gets to make the choice to like choose life and figure out who she is. But she's like overcome by overwhelming bouts of depression and an inability to make decisions and resisting destiny because it feels like too much work. And of course, I love when we do psychology and superhero stuff, but this character, doing her research, I haven't really thought of her a lot, but doing the research into her, I was like, oh, there's a tremendous amount of pathos, particularly for the trans community. Talk about your character connection to her, if you would.
Yes. So the reason that I chose her as my username on Instagram is my old username was just Ms. Robin. I'd chosen it after my transition. Easy, fine. And I kind of got bored of it. I was like, I want something that's not my own name. I was like, X-Men is like the franchise that I have the most love for and always have had the most love for. So I moved towards that and I thought, right, I want a username that pushes boundaries. I want cisgender heterosexual people to feel slightly uncomfortable when they have to say my username out loud. I've always enjoyed being able to push the boundaries of what is acceptable for queerness. Like in my drag, I said this last time I was on the show, I often do a lot of, I don't call it burlesque, it's stripping. I take all of my clothes off. I like to force people to reckon with the reality of what trans people actually look like, not the hyper stylized representations that we see in porn or in other forms of media. And I was like, could I get a username with the word tranny in it? Can I get Instagram to sign off on that? And thus far, they have not banned me. So clearly it's not a problem for them. So I was like,
it's in the middle of a compound word. If you put spaces and capitals, they might not like it as much.
I think that's right. So I ask every single person who's listening to this, please don't get my username reported. Thank you so much. I appreciate you in advance. I was like, right, what word starts with T? Who's a superhero who starts with T? And I started thinking of like really weird random pills. It was like Threnody. And I was like, no, I don't think she's the best one for me to use here. I was like pulling at different threads. And then I just thought, of course, Teenage and Negasonic Teenage Warhead. It was like Ellie for Mister. I've always had such a love for butch female characters. My absolute favorite character is Rachel Summers. When I see short-haired women just living their best lives, being queer, often in Marvel comics, not actually being able to say out loud that they're queer, even though they very obviously are. These are the characters I've always been drawn to. And I was like, yeah, Negasonic Tranny Warhead. There we go. And it was mainly picked for that reason. It was also to do with the fact that ever since her redesign, I've just really enjoyed her as a character visually. She often crops up in a lot of like Marvel games and stuff. She's in Marvel Snap as a card, things like that. She was just a character I always go back to visually. And then I thought about the fact, I was like, oh, I have actually read her in comics before. I've read her in Grant Morrison's New X-Men. Completely different design. I think a lot of people, if they read that in isolation, they may not realize that this is the same character from the Deadpool movies.
Yeah,
it's
so
just
let me
so
give
visually different.
Let me give the quick recap of this character. So in Grant Morrison's E is for Extinction arc, we see Emma Frost teaching a group of students in the mutant nation of Genosha, where millions of mutants are thriving. We get a couple of panels of Ellie kind of predicting things are going to go bad. There's kind of a precognition to like something terrible is about to happen. I've been dreaming of it. We can't stop it. And then she dies. And a few years later, in Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men, Emma Frost is having a series of breakdowns and visions, and she manifests the character Negasonic Teenage Warhead as someone to fight the X-Men with, but it's just a manifestation. Ellie comes back again during Necrotia, which is the Selene raising the dead of Genosha story.
Love it.
She's around for just a minute, and that's kind of it. She's not really explored. She's just kind of a strange connection to the Genosha event and to Emma Frost. But when the Deadpool movie comes out, we have the brilliant portrayal of this character with a completely different look, power set, and motivation. She's clearly identified as queer and butch and strong and like over life. And she's become part of like a beloved Deadpool franchise. So then they reappropriated the character of Negasonic Teenage Warhead to match what was in the film, which is something we see often. She becomes part of the Deadpool Mercs for Money series. She gets a little bit of focus in, weirdly, the Inhumans versus versus X-Men event. She becomes Deadpool's secretary for a minute, and then she's kind of gone again. And then we get her best story, in my opinion, which is her recent titled arc in the X-Men Unlimited Infinity comics, where she had a whole run called Negasonic Teenage Warhead, which has now been collected as a one-shot, is my understanding. There's a kind of a brief history of this character before we delve in, but there's something fascinating about her reinterpretation.
When you recontextualize, obviously it's not a trans story. When you recontextualize her transition from one style to another, there is very much a trans element to it, especially when you consider the way in which both pre and post Deadpool movie, Ellie always plays with and reinterprets or reimagines gender roles. Her initial design is so, it's this strange sort of industrial cyber goth style that is very strange and very striking in the comics. She looks quite out of place.
Yeah, the character I connect her most to style-wise is a character that debuted, 10 years before or so, which is M-Plate from Generation
X.
And there's a very similar kind of goth leather fringe, gray makeup, dark black energy about her. You know, like you expect to see like running tears painted on the face almost kind of energy.
And I think that's one thing that initially drew me to that version of the character is, I think maybe not for all trans people, but for me especially, and for my husband, both of us had very big goth phases before we came out as trans, because I think it's a safe space to be able to reinterpret and play with gender roles in a safe way. The goth community is very queer and very gender nonconformist. So seeing her do that, and then eventually come into her own through what eventually becomes, it's obviously they want to make her match the studio version from the movies. She is allowed to make that choice herself in the comics. And that's what really makes me love the character, because he is given the opportunity to reinvent herself. He does it by her own volition through her own powers, because she goes from just being a precognitive telepath to being a reality warper. So she is able to reinterpret herself however she wants to. And the fact that she chooses to go, I could have long hair and I could be a pretty girl. No, I'm going to be bald. I'm going to be full in my leather jacket. I'm going to be biggest butch lesbian that I can possibly be. I have so much love for this character. I think she's
But also, it's not to make any kind of statement. It's just this is who I am.
Yeah.
I'm not worrying about what you fucking think about me. And in fact, worrying about what you think about me is like the biggest stressful thing that I can imagine. So please leave me the fuck alone. And you know, it's not uncommon for in the queer community, particularly I think for trans people, we find safety in queer community. But when we grow up in a place that teaches us we don't belong, it takes time to figure out how we belong in a new space. And the places we tend to find that are in counterculture types of places, right? The goth space, the punk space, the polyamory, the Burning Man, the queer club. It's the places that are a little bit counterculture themselves. We're recording this 10 days, 9 days before the American election. So when this comes out, the election will be over. And good Lord, I have no idea what the fuck's going to happen in this fucking country. But just yesterday, I got like a spam, and I've gotten like 100 of these, but a spam text message from, I don't know, someone posing as the Republican Party. Like, help Trump win, click here with this link. Otherwise, Democrats want to let grown men shower with your children. That was the spinning of the text. And I was just like, oh my God, fuck. Like, this is where we jump on Fox News and we see people just weaponizing words and violence against the trans community, against women, against queer people. We're banning books and we're making drag queens unsafe. And there's all this rhetoric about like, if the Democrats win, your kid will be able to choose to be a cat and the teacher will have to put a litter box in the corner of the classroom. And like, there's these ridiculous, ridiculous, awful spaces. So just to be the person to say it out loud very quickly, I think the word tranny itself, much like the word queer, is a word that we can choose as ourselves, as parts of these community to use. But for you who are not part of the community, make sure you use them in very respectful and careful ways, because I do not want to hear for your hate speech, nor will I tolerate it, right? Like, so just we're using it here in a very affectionate reclamation way.
Exactly. I think that's such a good point. And I think sometimes it's something that it seems so obvious to me that I don't really think about it. Like I said, having been out as queer in so many different permutations from the age of 14, being, why am I 33 now? So that's like almost 20 years of my life. That's the vast majority of my life. It is so commonplace to me that I think sometimes, yeah, a lot of other people, a lot of gay people in my life have found it, have been very liberal in their use of the word tranny. And sometimes I think, are you using that with affection or are you just enjoying slinging a slur around? I think people should just try and be a bit more cognizant of the language that they use and how they can use it in a respectful way. So I appreciate you having just said that, Chad. I think that's a really good point to make. Thank you.
Well, and I think sometimes it's really easy for American listeners, at least, to understand when we look at words like the N-word, right? But when we use the word disabled versus the word cripple, right? We use the
Yeah.
word gay versus the word queer, and we certainly don't say faggot, right? There's places you just can't take the conversation, but sometimes it's more nuanced. For the Native American community, we should always say Native American or First Nations and never Indian. But if a person who's First Nations or Native decides to say the word Indian for themselves, then that's okay. It's just a
Yeah.
matter of educating ourselves, right? You better be careful. I'm going to invite you back again and again. And I think you're okay with that. So it's all right.
Honestly, I love the sound of my own voice. Like, this is something that I find so often in like drag spaces. I host shows all the time. I love talking to people. Actually, let me rephrase that. I love talking at people. My favorite is like a podcast setting where people can't really interrupt me and I can just go long. It's great. I love it. I'm too lazy to do my own. So if you want to invite me back as a guest, I will come back as much as you want me to.
You're smart and fun. Let's make it happen. Okay, so Ellie does not have a ton of appearances, but there is a ton to talk about. Let's take it thematically. I'm going to present her early stuff quickly, and then we'll kind of explore the themes. So we first meet Ellie Fimester, or Negasonic Teenage Warhead, in New X-Men 115 in 2001. I'm going to do a thing I never do on the show. This character by Grant Morrison is named after a song by the band Monster Magnet, who is a punk band kind of in the early 2000s. This song is literally called Negasonic Teenage Warhead. You can go listen to it. Did you not know this?
I did not know this.
It's got some punk vibes to it. It's got a good beat. It's very of the era. It's got a little bit of like Green Day energy. This band would probably
Whoa.
hate to hear me say that, but it's good. Give it a listen later. The lyrics to this song, I'm not going to sing for you all, but the lyrics to this song very quickly. I saw your face last night on the tube, strong, fine snake in a sucker's vacuum. 15 clicks and it's time to say bye. 15 trips and a love that won't die. Me and myself killed a world today. Me and myself got a world to save. Broadcast dead revolution, don't pay. Strapped up freaks on the Lazarus plane. I can tell just by the climate, and I can tell just by the style. I was born and raised on Venus, and I may be here a while. Because every supersonic jerkoff who plugs into the game is just like every subatomic genius who just invented pain. These phrases repeat multiple times. I will deny you, I will deny you, baby. Oh, baby, I'm lazy. Oh, baby, introduce me to God. Oh, baby, I'm lazy. Oh, baby, set a place for the dog. And then we get a shut me off. I go crazy with this planet in my hands, repeated four times. And then some earlier lines repeated again. So it's got very punk, kind of counterculture revolution vibes. This band has songs named like, Space Lord and like Ego the Planet. I don't know. Go look them up. It's interesting. It's not
Love
my
it.
favorite style of music.
That is so interesting. I think just hearing the lyrics, it's very interesting the way in which it's obviously not one to one, the way in which so much of the sentiment and lyrical content of that sort of condenses into Grant's story for Ellie is really interesting. But yeah, I mean, you look at her visually and she is very much countercultural. She is what I think a lot of teenagers are, is someone who is trying to find her place in the world. She's not been able to. She is rebelling against that by just being, I think at that point in her life, the biggest, loudest middle finger that she can possibly be to whatever people in Genosha have been telling her she should look like and how she should present herself. And that speaks to me. I like it.
So I have a memoir, it's being adapted into a graphic memoir right now, called Gay Mormon Dad. And I chose those three words because they represent different facets of my identity. I didn't put writer or therapist or trauma survivor in the title, although I could have done. It's a title that I want to feel like a little bit of a punch to the jaw. You're reading it on the airplane and the person next to you goes, "What?" Right? Like it draws your attention. And this character's code name does that for me. Negasonic Teenage Warhead. A warhead is what?
Lovely nuclear weapon,
Yeah,
usually.
like it will blow, like a little tiny thing that when it lands, it will fucking devastate you. We know what teenage means, right? Which is always kind of that counterculture, although Ellie's probably a little older than a teen now. And then we have the
Yeah.
word negasonic. And listeners, I'm going to get really crass for a moment, so please fast forward 30 seconds if you don't want that. The word negasonic, when you look it up on Urban Dictionary, has two meanings. The first one is the one that's implied. Negasonic, and it's not an official word, tends to mean, in counterculture, a musician who writes songs with negative lyrics. The other definition, and this is where I'm going to get crass, direct quote from Urban Dictionary, quote, when a beef is really loud in sound or smell, and then used in a sentence, dude, in the middle of fucking that chick, she went negasonic. Those are the two words on Urban
My
Dictionary.
God. That is...
How you doing there?
Chad, I have to say, but thank you for sharing that. And also, I hate you so much for sharing. That is, you know what?
It's upsetting.
It is, but also, I think that's the duality that Ellie wants to carry through in her life. I think that works quite perfectly.
I think she's okay with it, actually. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we go back to 2001, New X-Men 115, 116. Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely give us Genosha. We've already talked a little bit about Ellie's appearance. It's got that M-plate kind of tenderly black leather, pale skin. Mm-hmm. She's in one of Emma Frost's classes. She's been having some bad nightmares repeatedly over and over about a really bad like world-ending event coming up, and then the Sentinels come and just like wipe out the whole place. 16 million people are dead in a few minutes. The next issue, we see Emma emerge from the wreckage, her diamond form mutation triggered, which is an example of it come out multiple times, right? Emma comes out intersectionality as a rich girl and as like a dominatrix and as a telepath, but also now she has a diamond form, right? Like mutants are always discovering who they are. She crawls out of the wreckage and everyone is dead, and Emma is carrying the body of Negasonic Teenage Warhead. This idea of the last generation carrying the new generation from the ashes of destruction, even though the new generation predicted the destruction itself. We get the caption, her name is Ellie Fimester. Her mutant name is Negasonic Teenage Warhead. She chose it herself. She will be a credit to her family and the rest of her species, basically. Get her to a hospital, but they already tell her like she's dead, and Emma's like, then bring her back to life, you imbecile. We then jump to Astonishing X-Men Volume 3. Cassandra Nova is assaulting Emma Frost with illusions of her guilt, and among those in her mind are Negasonic Teenage Warhead. She fights Cyclops a little bit, but it's just a manifestation. We also get her in Dark Reign the Cabal number 1. Emma remembers that Ellie always smelled like soup, which is a really funny like little thing about this character. In X-Force 22-24, we then get Necrosha, which is Selene using magic and the Transmodes virus and Eli Bard to raise all the mutants from the dead. Some of them stay alive at the end of this, but among them, and we get this huge image of Negasonic Teenage Warhead, and Selene asks her name, and she goes, what difference does it make? I'll be dead again soon. And then two issues later, all the mutants are dead one more time. There's just kind of this doom and gloom, almost like she's just used as a little bit of a, like a, oh, remember this? Bye. Kind of side note to Emma's past.
When she comes back in Sosha, I'll have to say, I don't know if I'm a huge fan of the hypersexualized art of this dead teenage girl's breasts. Feels very unusual. I don't recall who the artist was, but it's an interesting choice. I also noted as well, as you said, the sadness and sort of the morose quality that exists around her in the way that she is always predicting not just death, but specifically her own. And again, taking it back to the narrative of transness and how she can represent that. I think pre-transition, I was always such a sort of doom and gloom and negative person because it felt like there was such little light in my life, at least in terms of how I saw and felt about myself. And I think it's really interesting the way in which she can represent and carry that sort of gloom and doom quality for people. And obviously, many people who aren't trans are still going to be able to find representation in Ellie in some capacity. But the way that I read that
story... To add to this really quickly, I'm raising two children, but this also identifies my generation. I'm in my 40s. The world has expanded double in my lifetime. We've gone from 4 to 8 billion in less than 50 years. And our resources are being used up, and all the land is taken, and there's budget crises and wars and people dying and climate change. And I think everybody has kind of this like, oh, the apocalypse is like right around the fucking corner. And we're just living in the face of all that. I think she captures that energy. It's a queer energy, but it's also this kind of like the world is ending energy that I don't think we see in a ton of characters unless they're literally written into a post-apocalyptic story, like fucking a old man Wolverine or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's the thing is, since she very much in this era of comics is the manifestation and representation of the grief and tragedy of the genocide in Genosha, she kind of is a post-apocalyptic character because after the very first issue that we see her, she only exists as like a memory of death and genocide. So yeah, she is kind of our post-apocalyptic character.
To take it slightly farther, if we go back to 2001 when this was written, at least for American audiences, 9/11, the way that it impacted psychology, the image of the burning towers and that idea of like terrorists are going to destroy the world. And again, we have this image of the telepathic, you know, 40-year-old teacher carrying the body of her student out of the wreckage, you know, revive her. And they're like, I'm sorry, she's already gone. That's really resonant. And that's kind of the first 10 or 12 years of Ellie. That's all we get. Occasionally we bring her back as a memory only to have her die again. And that's what she tells Celine, like, I don't, you know, leave me alone. I'm just going to be dead in a few minutes. Like, she can tell. What's the point?
Yeah. And I think as well, one thing that's interesting is knowing, I don't want to do too much psychology of the writer, but in Grant Morrison's creation of her, I know that their parents were both anti-nuclear activists. And I think it's very interesting the name that was chosen for this character. Obviously, knowing that it's coming from a song, it kind of has this existence already. But it's very interesting to see someone who grew up in such an anti-nuclear environment. Negasonic Teenage Warhead as the name for someone who is going to be the poster child for death and devastation of 60 million mutants. It has so many layers, but each time you peel it back, there's not a different emotion. Each time you peel it back, there's just more gloom and depression, and she is quite a somber character in this era.
Grant comes across as a writer who really put a lot of thought into every choice made. Not every writer does that, and that's okay, but this is just one page in one story arc in one longer run, and this character is resonant, and it's almost like, okay, how do I capture this? I got to create this character who's a teenage rebel just born to die, right? So then we jump to the Deadpool movie. The Deadpool movie was revolutionary. It took a lot of time and effort. And after a series of really bad, like, Fox X-Men films and Fox Spider-Man films, we had a really entertaining, delightful film, which was crass and funny with Ryan Reynolds. And we have the character Negasonic Teenage Warhead involved. I looked this up, and I think the only reason they chose her is because they really liked the name. And there's
that moment in the clip
where Deadpool's like, what's your name? Negasonic Teenage Warhead. He's like, that's the coolest fucking name I've ever heard. And she's a character in the film where in the comics, she has kind of that very gothy feel. And like her power seems to be precognition, right? Like I can see the bad thing about to happen. It's almost like a bad spider sense. But in the film, do you want to talk about her look and her power set? And she's queer in the film also, which is
like,
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Love that. So her style in the movie is she has this cropped buzz cut. She mainly wears like dark colors. So she's still kind of referencing that goth vibe from the original comics, but it's very like biker chick energy, but also kind of like biker girl dyke energy. She looks really cool. I think her visual style in both the Deadpool movies, it explains why even now in 2024, every single comic that she's been in is still just pulling from that look because it is so striking.
It's butch, but it's also very androgynous, right? Like,
yeah,
there's still a slight touch of like femininity. She likes to wear makeup to a certain extent and dress in like very fitting clothes. So it's giving less gender nonconforming and more androgyny a little bit, like playing in that like gender space. But again, gender expression, gender identity are not connected. Right, like everybody is their own version, but she does still give me it's a little tomboyish, it's a little butch, it's a little bit androgyny all at the same time, but it's fucking great. Yeah. And she gets called Sinead O'Connor a bunch of times, which is really funny.
The thing is, growing up, my mum's music was kind of like slightly heavier than Sinead O'Connor, so I never really grew up listening to her or anything. I just always remember the bald woman from that music video that I had seen so many times as a child. And I think
nothing compares. That's all you get.
This is the thing, is now that I'm thinking it through, I'm like, is my obsession with bald women, do I think bald women all look really cool because of Sinead O'Connor being so like resonant in the 90s? Is that, I think Sinead O'Connor is the one to blame for me being obsessed with bald women. Ah, God. Thanks for helping me realize that, Chad.
Oh, early that. Invitation, welcome back to the trial of Moondragon next summer. We have lots of...
Oh, I would love to. Oh my God, I love Moondragon so much. She is, honestly... Give me a bold lesbian.
It seems very apparent to me that Sinead O'Connor was the reference point that the filmmakers were using when they recreated Negasonic. Whereas that's clearly not Grant Morrison's reference. But that kind of, I'm going to shave my head and be beautiful anyway and make a video that's nothing but a close-up of my face. And then I'm going to burn a picture of the Pope on national television, right? Like there's very that energy. But she's got a cute little girlfriend named Yuki. And do you want to talk about her power set in the film?
Yeah, so her power set in the film seems to just be sort of explosive energy creation. She quite often, a few times that she uses her powers, she's basically just sort of blasting at people. It's kind of cannonball-esque, but without the velocity.
She builds up energy around her and then fires off a big blast. It's almost like Havoc a little bit, but the blast looks a little bit like Cannonball. I'm just going to draw this illusion once and then we're going to move on. Her power set, given that definition I read about the queef earlier.
No. not Ellie for Mr. the Great Queef. Oh, Chad.
Only in the movie version. Much.
I mean, given what the, as we mentioned, her most recent story kind of explains her being able to pull different power sets from her own future, I really hope that that is the power set she eventually chooses, just the power of supercharged queefing.
Listeners, I'm very sorry, but I guarantee you're smiling all at the same time. I know my audience.
I'm not gonna apologize for it. But people should know what they're getting themselves in for.
So she's been in 3 separate films, maybe even some cameos and a few others, but it's that first film where she gets the most attention. She's like the protege of Colossus, and she ends up becoming like the sidekick of Deadpool, and she has a girlfriend, and it's super cute. So then, because of the popularity of this character, Colin Bunn is writing Deadpool and a book called The Mercs for Money. Certain Deadpool books have like cult followings. Everyone buys them. They last a long time. They run 70, 100 issues, right? But other runs, you get a writer that tries it out and the book only lasts 6 or 7 and then they relaunch. And it's kind of hit or miss with this character. character sometimes. So this is back when there was the new era of Deadpool written by Jerry Duggan and I think Brian Posehn. Mm-hmm. And it went for a long time. Deadpool gets his daughter. There's connections to Wolverine and Captain America. And then they introduced a team in that book called the Mercs for Money. And I'll only spend a second on this. I feel like, I don't know Jerry or Brian, but I feel like they divided up all the roles that Deadpool plays. He's the teacher, he's the comedian, he's the assassin, he's the tryhard. And then they created a team called the Mercs for Money, where each one of the team members represents one part of Deadpool's like fractioned identity. And they all kind of like Stingray is the loser, right? Where Madcap is the unkillable crazy guy. And like Terror is the monster who grows back whenever you chop something off, you know? So there's this really interesting team that gets introduced, and it's popular mm-hmm. enough that they then launch their own series. There's two volumes of it. It doesn't run a long time. There's some weird stories told in these. And we first meet Negasonic in this era, where she is reintroduced as like a cute teenager with like long hair. She has like a room that has a bunch of posters of boys, and she's texting with her friend Cheryl about like, do you think I'll get asked out or not? And there's just this kind of odd energy about her. And it's almost as though, and we're going to learn, she kind of created this reality around her to fit in and have like a peaceful life, which is very Gwenpool in that way, but we won't go on a Gwenpool tangent today.
I think that's a pretty good sort of touch point for it. It was very strange for me because I had never read Mercs for Money until reading it in advance of this. And
well, this was
like,
your first time.
Yeah, it was my very first time. I like some Deadpool runs. I really enjoyed Alyssa Wong's recent Deadpool run. I thought that was phenomenal. But Deadpool's not always a character that I really resonate with. And I enjoyed reading Mercs for Money, but it was very strange to see Ellie. And I was like, this character, this makes no sense. And I think where the story goes with her basically being reinterpreted as a reality warper, it makes a lot of sense because it kind of helps thread the needle between the old Ellie from Grant Morrison and the new Ellie from the movies. It's a very smart way of doing it and kind of allowing both to be aligned in some capacity. Yeah, I think it's a smart way of doing it.
And the reason I draw the Gwenpool comparison, Gwenpool is a character who's meant to break the fourth wall. It's Gwen Stacy, but it's not. It's Gwendolyn, who's like this, I don't know, teenager who ends up in our universe. And the premise almost is that she's from our world, but she gets sucked into a comic book and she knows she's in a comic book. Yeah. And she's like talking to the reader and realizing I have to stay relevant, otherwise they'll write me out of publication. And so her, like, they keep bringing her back in like attempts to do big crazy things in order to stay relevant so people will want to read more about her. But eventually they reinterpret her as a reality altering mutant who like is just a little bit crazy. And Negasonic has a little bit of that energy. The stuff in Mercs for Money is not super important to Ellie, which is crazy because it's most of her chronology, but it's less resonant than the beginning and the end, which we'll get to in a second. But it is the thing that brings the movie version into the Marvel Universe. So I'll cover this very quickly. Deadpool in the Mercs for Money Volume 2, number 1, is where we see Ellie looking into the future. She's avoiding the Mercs' attacks. She knows Taekwondo in this. She also chooses to go with them all when she realizes that she can trust Deadpool specifically. And the reason these bad guys are after her is she has radioactive powers of a sort. And she is being driven away from the house. The house is vaporized as she leaves. So she walks away from the life she created and it just disappears into dust. It's now into a new reality. She tried to stay out of it and couldn't. And the Mercs for Money have been hired by a group called Umbral Dynamics, who have tasked them with capturing everybody who is radioactive, from Radioactive Man to Cobalt Man. And that's kind of the premise. They're just going after, you know, Nuke and like a bunch of different characters. Then in issue 4, we get a brand new Mercs for Money team. And this is where Domino, Hitmonkey, Gorilla Man, Machine Man, Massacre, and Negasonic Teenage Warhead are now in color-coordinated versions of Deadpool's uniform for part of this. They each have like, there's an orange Deadpool and a purple Deadpool. Again, there's a monkey with guns on this team. It's a crazy, crazy time. Ellie is bald and connected to wires. They rescue her from Umbral. There's a fight with Titania and Scorpia. And again, she knows Taekwondo here. And they're working for a lady named Caroline Le Fay, who is maybe the daughter of Morgan Le Fay and Dr. Doom. We're just not going to worry about it right now. She's absorbed all this radioactive energy. She absorbs the fucking Presence, who's a guy that's literally made of radioactivity, and then joins the Mercs for money. So the retcon that Robin just mentioned a minute ago, do you want to talk about how we understand Ellie's powers to work based on her most recent Infinity comics?
Yeah, so based on the Infinity comic, she basically was a reality warper who, feeding off of her original conception as a precognitive, is able to look into various different futures and pull powers from those futures, which she has the potential to develop. So she can look into the future and see that she could have the explosive powers from the movies, and then she can use those powers. Or she can look into the future and she can create teleportation portals, and then she has that power and she can pass them back. But eventually the implication is that she's going to have to lock in and choose one of them. The one that she chooses is the reality warping. It's very, the more you think about it, the less it kind of makes sense. But I guess that's very X-Men. So yeah, it fits. It fits. Don't think about it too hard. It's
see,
really cool.
I see it less as she chooses reality warping and more as her power is reality warping, but because she has this kind of precognitive ability to predict doom, she can look forward into other possibilities, because in a multiverse, there's every possibility out there, right? Like there's a world where I'm a slug having the same life. She can look in these worlds where different versions of her have different powers, but really what she's doing simply is mutating things in order to give herself new power sets. It's kind of like the where Husk pulls off a skin and has a different form underneath, right? Like Ellie can shed a power and then shed it into another power. It's Dial H for Hero. It's Rogue choosing which powers to absorb or access. It's Sync, who has a database of internal powers and moves them around. So we make it really complicated with the future precognition thing, but it makes her unique in this universe. It's even Legion, who has all the different superpowered minds, and he can pull one at a time and change his abilities as a result, right?
Well, I was actually just thinking as you were speaking there, when you mentioned Husk, obviously we've already mentioned Emplate as being like a visual similarity to her old design. The also with like the sort of blasting power, the, like a reminiscence of Chamber and his like psionic fire. Mm-hmm. He's very much like a distillation of the 90s angst of Generation X just made into a single character in some respects, if you think of her like that. Which explains why I like her so much. She appeals to the 90s emo child and goth that still lives inside me. So yeah, interesting.
A couple of key moments for her, and I love these conversations. You can feel it happening, right? Like as we talk, we're like, oh, look at all the resonance. I love these episodes. They're delightful. So a couple of key moments as we look through Mercs for Money quickly. There's one scene where Deadpool has created action figure versions of all of the Mercs for Money. And the one that represents Ellie is a troll doll that's naked, but he shaved all the hair off. She sees it. It's really cute. They fight the Circus for Prime. There's a bunch of battles with different people. Then there's the crazy Inhumans versus X-Men story, where there's a Terrigen cloud that has been released on Earth that is releasing latent powers in any Inhuman who was living among the human population and has any form of ancestry with Inhumans at all. They breathe this air. If it passes over their space, they get put into a cocoon, and then they come out with powers at some time later. X-Men, this cloud is poison to them. So if a mutant breathes this, then they get a disease called Mpox, which kills Cyclops and a couple of other characters. Hellion had Mpox for a while. I think even Rogue had it. Ellie sees the Terrigen cloud, and then we get a flash to a future 5 years later. So she's looking in, the Mercs are battling an Inhumans group called the Tribe, and New York is infested by demons and a bunch of people die, and they seek out Negasonic Teenage Warhead, who's like wearing purple robes and living like with Polaris, Nightcrawler, Zorn, Gold Balls. Rachel is here. They help her realize that she has to be responsible for her power use, and then we get this speech from this future. She says, I was there on Genosha when the Sentinel attacked, but then I wasn't dead at all. I was living a good life. So reference to that like teenager in the house thing, right? But all the others, they were dead, gone. I just didn't want to see the rest of the mutants die. I thought maybe I'd survive again and I'd have to look back with all the guilt and regret. She goes back into the past and we realize this future happened because Negasonic fought the Terrigen Cloud and changed it. And so now our future Ellie goes back to past Ellie and was like, actually, don't do that. And Ellie's like, okay, cool. I'm going to go hang out with Deadpool's daughter. And that's the end of the story. But up to this point, this is the most resonant Negasonic Teenage Warhead story that we have had. Yeah. What were your thoughts on reading this Terrigen Cloud story?
So I thought this was really interesting. First of all, for the future, I want Ellie to have this entire like team. I want this to be a team that some writer picks up and uses in current continuity, mainly just because I love Polaris and Rachel Summers. And I think seeing Ellie hang out with both of them would be really fun. I was like, this is such a cool team. And then I was like, have I completely misremembered in Humans versus X-Men? Did Ellie Femister actually solve everything and I completely forgotten how it all played out? No, alternate reality. Okay, cool. As I was reading, I thought it was really interesting because a lot of the sort of inner turmoil that she experiences is something that, again, going back to the trans analogy, it's something that I often have felt. And I think when I was in the closet as trans, I often had a lot of guilt thinking, oh, but if I come out and then if I go on the waiting list and if I pursue being trans, I'm taking away resources from other people who are more trans than me, which is a completely ridiculous way of thinking.
Except you were never pursuing being trans. You were trans the whole time.
Well, yeah, exactly. This is the thing is your own mental conception, the sort of gilded cage that you put over your own limitations or tell yourself is your limitations is, yeah, I think what Ellie represents is that the way in which we lock ourselves in a cage sometimes can be truly our biggest enemy, because that is, ever since she has come back, ever since she's been reimagined with these reality warping powers, she is kind of the only antagonist to her own story. No one else is really a threat to her, not with this level of power, but her lack of self-assurance is really what is constantly standing in her way. And I think that it makes her a really resonant and interesting character. I just wish that she had more stories that really delved into it, because this Inhumans versus X-Men alternate reality moment is so fascinating. But it's like, I think it was only 2 issues, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It's not long. It is not really given enough space because there's so much going on. Deadpool is really the main character of these stories, obviously. It's his comic. And I'm just like, I would love to have like a full issue that just explored Ellie and her mental mindscape and what it looks like to be someone who's had that life experience and now has the power to change it, but the lack of self-assurance to actually know what to do with it. It's a fascinating thing to think about. I think it's so cool, and I just wish that we had more space to play with that.
She is an extremely lazy character. She's very reluctant. She's very bored. She's very, very, very conflict averse. So if we look at psychology of mutant powers, genocide happens, and this character is capable of altering reality. She could go back and probably stop it from happening, but you got to think at like some sort of subconscious level, her powers kick in. And so instead of like saving the day, she creates a world in which she has a conflict-free life and she keeps getting pulled back into it. And her laziness and reluctance are really, really fascinating when you give the power set, the power that you have, right? We have to put limitations on limitless characters. Superman has kryptonite, Legion has multiple personalities in his brain, but we find different ways to tell these stories. We then get like Deadpool Volume 7, where Ellie is Deadpool's secretary running his mercenary business, which is in the back of a candy shop in a mall. And it's fine. Literally nothing really happens. Deadpool cracks lots of like, oh, it's a Negasonic teenage slushies over here. And look, there's a Negasonic teenage dog out on the road. It's, I don't know. It's really, they get really old really fast. And she literally has nothing to do. She's just hanging out on her phone and like is gone multiple issues at a time. There is a moment where there's a giant character named Groffon the Regurger attacks, and Ellie uses her powers to like make it so that she wins, and Colossus is there, which is of course a call to the movie. There's also, she like goes to like Weird World, and Bob, Agent of Hydra, is here. Anyway, it's fine. It's fine.
The only note that I wrote down when I was reading this is there is one single point where he references going on dates with boys, and I'm like, really? Really? No, I don't believe that for a second. I can believe that many queer women are bisexual. Ellie Femister is not one of them. This is a lesbian. Dates with boys, I take so much umbrage with that. That is the only thing that stood out to me.
Maybe she's bisexual, or maybe Marvel didn't allow them to say she was queer.
That one.
It was part of the movie. I don't know. Or maybe the writer just was lazy. I don't know. In the Krakoan era, we first see her in X-Men Volume 6, Number 8. She's hanging out with a girl who has pink hair outside the treehouse in Central Park. And Cyclops, who's dressed as Captain Krakoa, says, "Is Negasonic building a whole team of girlfriends?" And Sync goes, "She'll make a hell of an X-Man one day." So just we get that little one scene.
Yeah, right.
And then there's the story we always needed, which is the best Ellie story. It's the one titled for her. Now, scrolling comics, whenever we talk about Infinity Comics, it's not a full comic book. You basically, the writers get like 6 pages or like 36 panels. They scroll from top to bottom. And Ellie gets a 6-issue arc by Jeremy Adams, who I don't know a lot about, but this is well done. He takes everything about Negasonic and makes it special and like really expounds on it. So this is Marvel Voices Infinity 44 through 49.
This is probably, having fallen in love with the character just sort of visually and conceptually, this was the first arc where I was really like, this is fucking amazing.
So this arc opens, we get a lot of internal narration for her, which I really love. The arc opens with this kind of idea of entropy, this like global warming, the world's gonna end just like Genosha did, energy. Everybody is going to die. Some of us more than once. Even for immortals and clones and the endlessly resurrected, there is an end. A time when you don't come back. A time when you're not. I'm a precognitive telepath. I see futures. I know nothing lasts. What am I meant to do about it? Stop the universe from ending? I'm doing enough just getting through each stupid day on this planet. So we're capturing this character's pathos in one sentence or one paragraph, which I love. So this is where she takes a job working for Deadpool. He's tracking a flesh-eating pig for someone who's really odd. It's a cute little pig wearing a bow, and it's fine. Deadpool asks Ellie about Krakoa, and she's like, "I left." And we get the quote, "Island-based mutant utopias don't have the best association for me." And Deadpool goes, "Oh, because of Genosha, where you died?" And she says, "Where everyone died. Everyone I cared about. My whole class, my friends, my mom, and none of them came back. I did learn a few things before I quit, though. Some of those Krakoan magistrates were freaking out about my precog powers. Only my visions don't work like other precogs do. And my other gifts keep fluctuating, so they helped me figure out why. My visions show me my possible futures. There are paths I can take where I develop different gifts, like super strength or power blasts. And when I choose a path to take, my present self syncs with my future self, and I'm able to access those powers now like a backward echo. But if I make a different choice, everything changes, and I don't want reality warping powers. Do you know what happens to people with reality warping powers? To women with reality warping powers?" And then she sees a future in which a frightening reality is like existing, unless she manages to kiss a girl she's never met named Yuki. And again, this is a direct reference to the movie, because she has a cute little Asian girlfriend who's so adorable in it. She sees herself at a tribunal for threatening the existence of everything. We learn her middle name is Olivia here, Ellie Olivia Fimester. She knows that if she doesn't kiss this woman, everyone in the world's gonna die. And you have to wonder if it's her subconscious forcing her towards some sort of happy path. So there's a moment where she has a telepathic conference with Emma Frost, the Invisible Woman, Shuri, Dr. Tony Ho, the Iron Patriot, and the Scarlet Witch, and Moondragon, and Phi Lavelle, and Jean Grey, and Boom Boom. And everyone's like, "We needed experts on everything." And someone's like, "What's Boom Boom doing here?" But Boom Boom's mastery of social media gives them everything they need. She seeks out Yuki, who's living in Canada, but Yuki has powers and she's off in space. And now the Time Variance Authority are here. Go watch Loki if you want more on those guys. They have a series coming up, the TVA, which is crazy. The TVA, yeah, there's a limited series called the Time Variance.
All right, okay.
Yeah. The TVA calls Ellie a, quote, cosmic disaster, but she escapes from them by unleashing that mutant pig from earlier. She goes back to the ruins of Genosha. She's talking to Emma. She's thinking about her old life, her mom, her home. She had a lizard as a pet named Rubella Deathrock. And then Moondragon is like, "Oh, Yuki O'Hara has been found. She's fighting Galactus in space," except it's not Galactus. It's someone called Megasonic Endless Godhead, which is a future version of Ellie that is a world-devouring, like, space god. So Ellie is super overwhelmed by her powers. She watches Yuki from afar and she wants to confront her own alternate Galactus self. So she has to sacrifice herself to stop, but then she's pulled out of the timeline by a being named Numinous, who looks like Whoopi Goldberg and is a little known Marvel cosmic entity, as well as the Scarlet Witch. And they talk some sense into her, like, dude, unless you kiss this girl, like the world's gonna end. So just fucking do it. And so Ellie finally approaches Yuki, asks her on a date, and like they only have seconds left before the world's gonna end. So Ellie like slows time down and they go on like a date and they get to know each other. And in the end, they kiss and the threat is averted. And it's insane, but I fucking love this story. I don't like time travel or crazy, but this one's really fun. So there's a quick summary and there's probably some things I missed, but what are your thoughts, Robin, on this lovely, lovely arc?
So I want to touch on what you just said there. Time travel stories can be very weird and confusing. And I kind of like that this one, it takes almost a Doctor Who approach where it just treats time travel like butter to be spread on toast. This is the softest soft science you could possibly have. None of it really makes any sense if you try and think about it logically, but you shouldn't think about it logically because this is Ellie Fimister and her reality warping powers. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I think the thing that I really like about this story is it lets her actually be the main character in a story rather than just being ancillary. Prior to the movie, she just existed as someone that Emma Frost could feel bad about having died, which, let's be honest, Emma had enough people that she could feel bad about having lost over the years, but she gets one more. Then the movie comes along and she becomes Deadpool's secretary. She just kind of always exists as the person to sit in the little side wagon of someone else's motorbike, and suddenly she's given the reins of her own story. And as you said, to limit her power, she has made an exceptionally sort of lazy and inertia driven character. She doesn't really have a lot of impulse to do anything. And this story is kind of a bunch of women stepping in and going, kid, you need to sort yourself out. And I think that is something, once again, going back to the trans analogy, coming into my own as a woman and realizing, oh shit, there's so much that I didn't realize is at play here. And there's so many things you have to think about and so much that you have to either choose to live up to or eschew in terms of fulfilling womanhood as a gender role in society. And having people who are more experienced than you, who can actually give you a little bit of guidance, but ultimately will not do things for you. They'll give you the skill set, they'll give you the tools and tell you, you have to go and do this yourself. I think that's a really cool and resonant story because it's something that we all have to go through in life. And it is so cool that a character who has existed since 2001 finally gets to have a little bit of self-control after 20 odd years. And it gives me a lot of hope for all the small characters that exist at Marvel. Maybe one day people like Hydra Bob will get their own story.
Bob has had a few solo little adventures. I hope this blows your mind. If Ellie was born in 2001, that would make her 25 years old today, or 23 years old today, right? And I have children that are 16 and 13. Our generation into the next generation, we've been capturing this idea of the doom and gloom, social media, everything's gonna end, what's the point, we don't need to vote, who cares, the world's gonna die, right? This last story for Ellie, she tried to hide, she tried to create a reality in which she could just put her sunglasses on and ignore the world ending, but now she's faced with the literal world ending. And it's not her fault, but the parallel is if she doesn't take action and choose to hope and try to find a future and a happiness, then the world is gonna end. And so the thing she's so reluctant to do and fights so hard, even when everything's coming at her, is she has to choose to stop time for a minute and have a conversation and to lean into conflict and make a choice. And when she does that, her future's allowed to continue. But if she doesn't, then the doom and gloom she's always been afraid of is gonna overwhelm her universe. So it's a weird comic book version of self-fulfilling prophecy, that psychological term of the thing I'm afraid of I make happen, and it's only her choice to hope at the end that allows her future to continue. I think this is a beautiful pathos, and I doubt some of that was intended, but Jeremy Adams in particular in this story arc takes all of the disparate odd pieces of this character from before and weaves it into this kind of lovely, exactly what we needed for Ellie, right? The giant world-ending megasonic teenage god or endless godhead, whatever it was called. Just ridiculous, right? What are we going to do against it? How do we fight back against this elevated ego and lean into the conflict and make a decision? Really smart. I'm really pleased with this arc.
Yeah,
Bravo, Jeremy
definitely.
Adams. Bravo.
Yeah, I don't think I can really add much more because you kind of summed up perfectly what is so cool and resonant and just interesting about the story. And I just want to see more of this sort of stuff. This is what I really love about the Infinity Comics on Marvel Unlimited. I think you get to see such unique and interesting takes on characters. The one that I always think of as well is Karma's Love Unlimited Infinity arc. I think there's so many cool stories. If people have not read the Infinity Comic arcs, I would recommend that they go and check some of them out. They are phenomenal, and just because they've not all been printed doesn't make them any less interesting. I would argue it makes them more interesting. I think they're so cool. So I would just encourage anyone who's listening who hasn't already to go and check them out.
The more directive part of that is if we aren't buying these stories, Marvel will not keep making these stories. So
Yep.
make sure we're putting our support behind the types of stories that we want to
Definitely.
see more of. And then we have Ellie's most recent appearance in the 2023 Pride special. This is a story about Jumbo Carnation designing fashion for the Hellfire Gala, and they are doing some last minute costume design for a few queer superheroes. The writer and artist on this is an Irish creator named Stephen Byrne. I don't know a lot about Stephen. We get to see some really fun images. It's just a short story of Jumbo with a rainbow clad chicken designing some really fun full page looks for characters like America Chavez, Viv Vision, North Star. And on the last page, we include a Shatterstar and Negasonic on that page. Negasonic is a very short, sleek kind of crew cut, nose ring, earrings, black collar, this incredible yellow jacket with a popped collar and plaid skirt, black boots. Great look. If you were ever going to cosplay this character, this is the look that you should do. Absolutely. It's incredible. Robin, I've had a delightful time today. This character is not one I'd given a lot of thought to, so thank you for the challenge of choosing this
You're very
character.
welcome.
I adored doing this research, and even more so, I really enjoyed my conversation with you today. And I think we both learned some things, right? Like it's a
Yeah, definitely.
cool thing. I often will leave one of these episodes asking the question, like, what story about this character do you think you need? Which will then lead to me going, ooh, here's the story I want to write. I like this character. I don't think I'm the person to write this character. I think she's fascinating. I don't think my brain is sci-fi enough to grasp her, but boy, would I see Charlie Jane Anders or Derek
Yes.
Kunstgen or like some of my favorite sci-fi writers lean in, and it would be fucking rad because she has a tremendous amount of potential. Do you have any final thoughts about Negasonic, and where can people find you online? Is there anything you'd like to plug?
I want to echo what you just said. Charlie Jane Anders writing this character would be wonderful. This is my suggestion. I'm just going to throw it out. I would love to see like an all queer X-Men team of characters like Escapade, Ellie, Rachel Summers, throw in whoever else you want. Give it to Charlie Jane Anders and just let her go along. I think that would be phenomenal. I'm not going to suggest any plots. Just there's the ingredient. Someone else can cook it. As for where people can find me on Instagram, you can find me at Negasonic Tranny Warhead. If you want to see my personal life, that is basically going to be me and pictures of my lovely cats. If you want to see my professional work, then you can follow October underscore fist. That is the thing that your hand can make. Yeah, you'll see me being an absolutely monstrous crossdresser on there. Otherwise, I intend to write a book at some point in the future, but I am lazy, just like Ellie. That's why she speaks to me. So I haven't started it yet. But at some point in the future, look for a book with the title Something by Robin Moffat.
Final thoughts on Ellie as I'm like digesting our conversation. I don't need her in a Deadpool book again. I think we've been there, done
Yeah.
that. Now that she's grown up a little bit, the place that would be interesting, and if we're looking at the current books, Emma is in this kind of the next generation mentor in Exceptional X-Men by Eve Ewing. Emma building some sort of school. We've seen Emma involved with Ellie in this Infinity story. We've
Yep.
also seen Emma take a direct hand in Escapade's journey by putting her in Avengers Academy with Anthony Oliveira. Emma doing something with the next generation. conversation and getting Negasonic involved, I think could be really interesting. But again, I don't think I'm the right person to write that story. The right writer has to come along and love her just so. But until then, I'm really glad about the history that we got. She's resonant in a way that I hadn't expected. Okay, we're going to put this out on the Patreon on November 13th. The next episode you can watch out for after this is another oddly queer character. We're doing like queer youth characters this month, and it just happened randomly, and I didn't even notice the theme. We did Indra last week. Next week is going to be the character Bolt. Chris Bradley, who is kind of the youth poster child for the legacy virus in the late 90s. It's a really interesting episode, so watch out for that. Out on the main show right after this, we're celebrating Wolverine's first appearance in November on my show. So we will be covering a What If story. What if Wolverine had killed the Hulk in that first appearance? It's also a full celebration of the character Morph from X-Men 97, themed in that episode with J.P. Karliak as my featured guest, and X-Men producer and director Sean Genka and Emmett Yanamura joining us for that one. Thank you, everybody, for the ongoing support. Thank you, Robin, for this delightful conversation. I can't wait to hang out again. We'll see you all back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.